All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Good afternoon, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and it is my privilege today to present Veterans Radio to you around the world. And we want to welcome all of our veteran brothers and sisters and thank you for your service. And we want to welcome all of you civilians for supporting your military so well these days. It's really great to see how everybody is stepping forward to help veterans readjust or transition back into civilian life, making sure that there are jobs available, making sure that there are all kinds of things that we can do to help our veterans when they return home from a conflict. We're going to be talking to a number of people today, as we always do here on Veterans Radio, and we want to encourage you, if you would like to get in on the conversation, to give us a call here at Talk Radio 1600. The number in Southeast Michigan is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Or you can call us toll-free at 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET-1600. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things. First of all, we're going to be talking about an organization that's getting nearer and dearer to our heart here on Veterans Radio. That's called Veterans Matter, and I'll be having the founder of that organization on in just a second. In the second half of the program, we're going to be having a general on to talk about an organization that is arranging for pets for vets. And we know how soothing and how helpful that a pet can be for a veteran who's coming home from some sort of conflict that helps kind of gives them a buddy or pal to hang around with and takes away some of that stress that many of us had when we came home at first. And then on the third half of the program, as I say on talk, Car Talk, is we're going to be talking to Amy Strebe, who has her book about flying for her country, and we're going to be talking about women pilots during World War II, especially they were called WASPs. This is the Women Air Force Service Pilots Program, and the reason that we're going to be talking about that today is that there has been news recently that the WASPs, these women who are now in their 80s and 90s, are not allowed to be buried at Arlington Cemetery. And so this we found a little bit outrageous. In fact, we found it a lot outrageous. So we're going to be talking with Amy at the bottom of the hour and talking about not only what the WASP did for their country in the mid-1942, 43, and 44, but also what is going on with this outrageous thing that the military has come up with now for a reason for these women not to be allowed to be buried in Arlington Cemetery. So if you have any questions and comments about that, give us a call at the numbers I gave you, or you can send me an email while we're on the air. That's dale@veteransradio.net. And coming right now is our first guest, and that is Ken Leslie. And Ken is with Veterans Matter. And Ken, welcome to Veterans Radio again.
Dale, how are you, my friend?
Boy, you're more excited than I am.
It's a great Sunday, man.
It is a
and
great Sunday.
Thank you again. We just so are appreciative of your support, friendship, and helping us get there.
It's a great program. Tell our audience again, or remind our audience of what Veterans Matter is and how it got started.
Veterans Matter is a little program we started here in Toledo to house 35 local veterans after we were doing a blitz into the woods and abandoned buildings and found out that veterans, homeless veterans didn't have the deposits. So we started the program to fund deposits here, and now it's gone national.
I don't want to cut in just a second. What do you mean a deposit? Why do they need a deposit? Are they getting help with the housing?
Oh, yeah. So are you sitting down?
I am.
Because the VA has a really good program, and I didn't want you to fall. It's called HUD-VASH. And it's a brilliant program. They've done so well in helping the homeless veterans nationwide, and they provide the long-term rent for veterans with the housing vouchers plus, and probably more importantly, a caseworker, social workers who are working with the veteran and veteran family to help them get back to domestic autonomy. Mm-hmm.
But but there's something missing in that program.
The deposit. Yeah, it seems that homeless veterans on the streets don't have jobs frequently and then don't have the deposits. So we created this thing to do 35 local, and it's gone now national thanks to a bunch of music people in the industry across the country, ZZ Top, Dusty Hill. They've raised a little over $250,000 down in Texas, now it's almost 500 veterans. Mr. Mellencamp helped with Indiana. We raised, I think, close to $40,000 there. And Operation Michigan, which has been doing very well thanks to your support. It was started by Mitch Albom, Kid Rock, Katy Perry, all raised money. And then the company in Ann Arbor, Jordan Reese's, who are just, in, I mean, it just moves me to tears, but to date they've given over $200,000.
I had the opportunity to talk with them last week. They're putting together a fundraiser, which we can talk about before we let you go.
Sure. Yeah, aren't they incredible?
They are. They're amazing men and women up there.
The spirits. I mean, when people come forward as Americans to be able to help, I mean, it's inspiring. It's awe-inspiring, isn't it?
It truly is, especially when these companies that you're not familiar with, that you really have never heard of, you know, step forward, as you said, and offer their support in more than one way.
And what's so funny, and this is, you know, the condition when they came on board was, listen, we want to do this, but we don't want any publicity for it. And those are exactly the kind of people that I want to talk about.
Absolutely.
Those who do it from the humility of just being able to help people. And to me, that's what makes them heroes. And I can smell the difference, you know, when companies say, oh, yeah, you know, here's $100. We'd like to do a press conference. No, you're missing the point here. I mean, we're helping veterans, and Jordan Reese's is just that incredible company that does it. They blow me away.
They do. So the VA does provide rent for these folks to get into apartments and housing, but they don't have the deposits, and that's where Veterans Matters comes in.
Exactly. So we're funded in 11 states, and we've got funding for. And the VA social worker, when they have the veteran with the apartment ready, all lined up, lease negotiated, the veteran's ready to sign the lease, the VA social worker goes on and gets an online referral, which all conforming referrals are approved literally in minutes. And we email back to the landlord saying, hey, we got this covered. And because we're backed by 20-plus celebrities, a lot of the landlords are letting our veterans into that housing immediately, as opposed to the 30 or 60 days it normally takes.
Oh, okay. So they don't have to come up with 2 months' rent plus a 1 month's rent deposit and all these other things.
Right. That's what us as Americans, you know, we're just, our little group does, is we say thank you by eliminating that last barrier.
Well, you just reached a great big milestone, didn't you?
Oh, we did. It's so cool. It was on Leap Day, as a matter of fact. It was so perfect. 1,000 veterans now housed nationwide.
That's 1,000 veterans, folks, who now have their own place to live that they didn't have before, thanks not only to the VA, but also to the very generous people who have been helping out Veterans Matter. And not only did you do 1,000 nationwide, but right here in Southeast Michigan, you also had a milestone, didn't you?
I think we're about 150 up there.
Yeah?
If I remember right. Yeah. It blows me away. And we just got notified. Mitch Albom is the chairperson for Operation Michigan. Got notified. They were yesterday, as a matter of fact, that we're going to Detroit in the next 2 weeks to get another contribution to Breast Disease Operation Michigan.
Wow. Cool.
The VA is about to release 10,000 more housing vouchers nationwide, so we're gearing up funding now and trying to raise the funds to be able to stay ahead of that curve.
Okay. Well, that would be the reason that I was invited to go and talk to the people at Jordan Reese, because we are going to be trying to do a fundraiser here in Southeast Michigan in the Ann Arbor area on May 14th. It's a Saturday evening. They are doing a fundraiser. All the money will go to Veterans Matter, and there'll be more information as we get closer to that date, but we are going to have silent auctions. We're lining up music for them. And little entertainment here and there. So it should be a fun evening on that Saturday evening, May 14th. So mark it on your calendars for all of you that are listening to us live here on Wham Talk 1600 in Ann Arbor. And those of you that are within, you know, 1,000-mile radius, put it on your calendar also.
Yeah, we'd love to meet all of you, man. We're going to be there. And one of our, it's a really beautiful story about Corporal Pullum. We'll save it for another day, but he's one of the veterans from Indiana. He'll be speaking. Dr. Chad Audi out of Detroit with the Detroit Rescue Mission. He'll be speaking. And we're going to be talking about the power that these people who have given their lives, risked their lives for us, coming back, and the power of our ability to be able to help them move forward.
Well, we're very, very excited to be involved with Veterans Matter, Ken. And I can't wait to reach your next milestone. And I hope to be talking to you in the next couple of weeks to find out more about it. This is what people can do out there, ladies and gentlemen. These are not, a lot of these people are not veterans. They're just out there to help these veterans, men and women, who are struggling a little bit and need a little, you know, lift up. to get back into the flow of a civilian life. So thank you, Ken Leslie. Where could we go to help you out?
VeteransMatter.org is the website, or they can text VETS to 41444. They can click through, make a donation of any amount on their credit card. But before we go, I just want to say thank you to you and Veterans Radio for supporting Veterans Matter and supporting the benefit on the 14th. We're glad to have you involved. It's such a cool team that we've got.
Well, we will definitely mark it on our calendar and bring as many of our friends as we can.
Love you, man.
How's that? All right. Thank you very much, Ken. It's Ken Leslie, Veterans Matter, and we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to have another organization that's out there to help veterans, and that's called Pets for Vets. So stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. And we're back here on Veterans Radio, moving along to other ways that we can help veterans. And joining me on the line right now is retired Major General Frank Schober. And Frank is involved with an organization called Pets for Vets. General, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, it's great being on the program. I very much appreciate you having me.
Well, it is our pleasure to have the opportunity to talk to people like you that are getting involved with these organizations. Before we get into Pets for Vets, can you tell me a little bit about your background? I know that you you were in Vietnam for a while. You taught at West Point, but tell us how you got involved with the military to begin with.
Well, I was in ROTC and getting some money being a cadet, and I did well enough to become a so-called distinguished military graduate, University of Santa Clara in California, and came into the Army and got some interesting assignments. And before long, I was in the Army 10 years and decided to make it a career. And I am proud of my service and proud of all my fellow soldiers that I served with in Vietnam, where I commanded a battalion in the Mekong Delta. And before then, I had taught at West Point, and not a graduate of West Point, but they brought a group back to avoid inbreeding, and that was our job.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
That's we, but anyway, I had a great career, and now I'm very interested in doing all I can in a simple, organized way to do something about this veteran suicide issue.
Right. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Veterans are, unfortunately, there are approximately 22 veterans a day that are committing suicide. And we here at Veterans Radio, and of course all the organizations that we talk to out there, are trying to do whatever we can to help these men and women adjust. And so you've gotten involved in this organization called Pets for Vets. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, the idea came from I was listening. She died a year ago or so, Joan Rivers, the comedian, and she was talking about a bad time in her life 12 years earlier when she'd lost her program, she'd lost finances, her husband had committed suicide. She was sitting in her kitchen holding a weapon and about to commit suicide herself. And just then her dog burst into the room, jumped on her lap and knocked the weapon down on the floor.
Goodness.
And she said, "My goodness, who's going to take care of my dog?" So I thought, you know, this would be a way, I think, of helping vets easily by getting animal shelters in the U.S. to give waive fees for all vets. And then I studied a bit more, and I found that suicide in all the forms it takes is generally a function of loneliness, feeling that nobody cares, nobody can help them, nobody has any feeling for them, and a pet dog can help more than anything else, because I think, as you and all your listeners know, Dogs have fidelity, acceptance. I mean, whether you're gone for 15 days or 15 minutes, they're always glad to see you. And I don't know about this terrible number of 22, but here's my assumption. If they had a dog, they wouldn't have done it. So we got our local animal shelter in Santa Fe, New Mexico, to have a program. They have posters around the community, Pets for Vets. It says all adult animals are honorably discharged for free for veterans. Kittens, puppies, and shelter heroes are 50% off.
Wow.
It doesn't require fundraising, doesn't require setting up a 501(c), doesn't require we ask people for money. And the only thing that I would very, very much hope comes from today's program is that your veterans that are listening would ask their animal shelters in their communities just to do the same thing.
This is so simple.
It's
probably not simple to try and get people to do this, but the idea of a veteran can just go to any animal shelter, and the animal shelter will allow them to choose a particular animal and waive all the fees, correct?
Yes, and the fees here, I suppose they vary community to community, but we're talking about staying and neutering and health care, and it can be up to $150.
Mm-hmm.
To do this, I think would make the biggest single difference. And we know that I think that the soldiers I've talked to, the returned veterans, are not likely to go to want to be diagnosed with PTSD, although they may be suffering from it. They admit it at all. But a dog is a And a cat, I'm not as familiar with the effects of a cat. It seems cats do, people love them, and they have the same good feeling about them. But people get stress reduction completely from having a pet. So I can give your listeners the name of a person to contact here if they wish in Santa Fe, New Mexico, if to get any more details on the program. But I think some German thinker about military things, and it's true, in any organization, any operation, only that which is simple has a chance of success. And this program mm-hmm. is absurdly simple, absolutely simple.
Well,
and
it certainly
I
is.
I think it'll help. Yeah. So,
Are you affiliated then with the website Pets for Vets, or is this something that's
no.
separate?
No. No, it was just actually a name. It's probably not copyrighted, I hope, but
Animal
Shelter here used it in their communication. I found out that, I don't know if your viewers know this, the vets who are listening know it, but some 2.4 million dogs and cats are euthanized every year.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are offspring of purebred animals that come into the shelters. And you put a dog in the shelter, and although the Santa Fe shelter in New Mexico is trying to get a 90% success rate with adoptions and avoiding euthanasia. But in many shelters, if not most, you've got 72 hours before the pet is euthanized.
Mm-hmm.
And 2.4 million dogs and cats are euthanized every year. So this solves, I think, a couple of problems. It helps a bit with reducing the number of pets euthanized, and I'm sure, absolutely sure, it'll help pets if they have a dog that cares for them and that they care for.
Well, absolutely. I totally agree with you, and I can't think of anything that would be simpler than to have these shelters, give these dogs to people that need them instead of putting them down. Who is the person, or what is the number that people need to call to get more information?
Ben Swan. S-W-A-N-N, Ben Swan, and he's at area code 505-983-4309. I wanted to give the thanks, too, to the board of directors and to Mary Martin, the executive director, because they actually came up with the idea that we could do this, and it would help them avoid euthanizing animals. And you know, a dog that's like is going to be very faithful often is 3 or 4 years old. Nobody wants them, mm-hmm. But all adult animals, that's all adults beyond the puppyhood, are given for free to vets here. If we could get that done throughout the country, I think we would help maybe reduce that number 22 that atrocious number every day that we lose of our vets.
That's very true. We've done a number of programs on the effect that these animals have on their owners, and I'm trying to think. There's an organization here in Michigan that's called Stiggy's Dogs, and they train the dogs to, you know, to be companion dogs, and that's one organization. And as I'm surfing around the website, internet, I can see that there are others that are out there. We had a gentleman on the program a number of years ago, and he'd written a book called Until Tuesday, and Tuesday was his dog that he received from a shelter, and that it changed his life entirely. And we got to talk to him here in the studio, and Tuesday was with him, and it's just, you know, it is amazing what these animals can do for these men and women. All either of them need is a little companionship and somebody to let them know how important they are.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a long-term companionship of mankind, and dogs is they're just meant for each other. I mean, a dog, as you know, if you've had them, is very easily able to determine your moods, moods are. And so I think it would just do a hell of a lot of good. So I'm really delighted you gave me a chance to talk about the program.
Well, we'd love to have you back on the air, General, at some point in the future as this thing grows bigger and bigger. We want to know your progress, and we'll do whatever we can here in the Michigan area and see if we can get people to participate with you. For our listeners, I want to remind you, if you want more information on this particular program, you can call Ben Swann, S-W-A-N-N, and his number is 505-983-4309. And I'm sure that, again, what was the name of the town that you are in New Mexico?
Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And this is your animal shelter there?
Yes, it's the Humane Society, and it's called the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, but its official title is S Santa Fe Humane Society. They have a website that it's sfhumanesociety.org.
Humanesociety.org. Okay, well, we'll try and put all this, as much information as we can, up on our site so that we can make sure that more of the people hear about what's going on in New Mexico, and we'll try to spread this organization all across the country. How's that?
Thank you. Thank you, Dale. Well done. I appreciate it. And if we could save just one guy, one vet, one lady, one man, we could save any through this program, but I think we'll save many more, actually.
I think we will, too. Thank you very much, General, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Neil. Bye-bye.
Well, there's two organizations that are helping out, folks. We've got Veterans Matters, which is providing the deposit so people can move into their apartments. And here we've got the Santa Fe Humane Society of giving their dogs to veterans without any of the fees that are attached. I think this is a great concept. As the General pointed out, 2.5 million dogs and cats are put down every year. Give them a home. Why not? It sounds like a great concept. One of the reasons that I got in touch with the General, or that we kind of crossed paths here, is that there's a story that we're going to be kind of talking a little bit about next week, is that we have found out, we got an email from a woman with the New York Post newspaper, that the current dog handlers coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan are not being able to adopt their own dogs. Now, who better to take care of these dogs who have been out there, you know, sniffing out bombs, IEDs, and all the other jobs that these dogs learn than their handlers. And evidently the government has gotten some sort of private contractor involved, and these dogs are not going to their original handlers. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that next week with Bob and his guests to see what we can do to help out these people and match these dogs with their handlers, just like we were talking with the general today, to make sure we get these pets in veterans' hands so that they can have somebody that, you know, or something that cares about them. And it's not like their family doesn't care about them or their friends don't care about them. But, you know, all of us who have ever had dogs, that's an unconditional love scenario going on there. So we don't have to worry about that. I want you to stay tuned after the news at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be coming back. We're going to be talking about women pilots in World War II. I bet you didn't know there were any. We'll be right back. And we're back on Veterans Radio. It sounded like a little bit more modern airplane than what we're going to be talking about with our interview. I just wanted to remind you, for those of you that are just tuning in, we were talking about Veterans Matters, which is a program run out of Toledo, Ohio, that provides the deposits for veterans to get into their apartments. Because you see, the VA has a program that provides you with the rent, but they don't provide the deposit money. So Veterans Matters has put together this program across the country. And is we've now housed 1,000 veterans across the country in the last 6 months, and that's pretty exciting. And I wanted to just remind you, if you want to know more about Veterans Matter, not only can you go to their website, veteransmatter.org, but you could go back into our archives and listen to the program that we did with Ken earlier in the year, and you can go to our podcast, which if you go to veteransradio.net, up across the border at the top, it says listen 24/7, click on that, and we've got a longer interview with Ken on that website. And we'll be talking more and more about Veterans Matters and these other organizations that we've mentioned today as we go into the future on Veterans Radio. It's so exciting to be able to help these veterans out. And speaking of helping veterans out, this is why we've got this segment coming up in just a little bit. So joining me on the air right now is a guest who was on our program back in May of 2009. See, folks, we've been on the air for a couple of days now, and we're pretty excited by that. But joining me on the program right now is the author of a book entitled Flying for Her Country. The new paperback version of this book is out, and our guest is Amy Goodpaster-Strieb. And Amy, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale. Thanks for having me on your show.
It is exciting to talk to you. It's exciting to talk to you about these women pilots. And let me kind of set up the story here for our audience. The reason that we are talking about this today is that I was reading an article in the New York Times, February 10th, it says, or 20th, excuse me. It says, female pilots we betrayed. And I'm going, betrayed? Now what did we do? Well, Amy, you can jump in any time here, but the history of these WASPs, the women's, where did it go? Women's Air Force Service pilots. Tell me, first of all, tell me about them.
During World War II, all the male pilots were kind of shipped overseas to flying combat, and there was a real need for aircraft to be transported from manufacturers to air bases, and there's a lot of jobs that stateside were kind of left undone. So the Air Forces decided to train female pilots, the first time they've ever flown in a military capacity in the United States. So Jacqueline Cochran, who is a very accomplished aviatrix in her own right, started the Women Air Force Service Pilot Program, the acronym known as the WASP. And so from 1942 to 1944, this group of women that was only about a little over 1,000 women flew about 60 million miles in every kind of aircraft, from P-51 fighters to, B-24 bombers, everything that the Army Air Force's arsenal had to offer, they flew. They also were tow target pilots. They were test pilots. So basically did, like, you know, the whole, everything that the men did in the cockpit, aside from obviously flying into combat.
Right, and they were also instructors.
Right? Exactly, yes. They were also flight instructors as well.
And so during the World War II, this is what these women did. They jumped to answer the call and flew these planes everywhere. A number of them, unfortunately, were killed. How many do you know off the top of your head?
38. Yeah, 38 WASP were killed in service.
Wow. And how many total did you say were involved?
There's a little over 1,000 that flew actively during the war.
That's not a good ratio.
Yeah.
Of course,
and the thing about the WASP, too, is that they were never militarized like the other services were. So they had kind of a quasi-military status, which was disturbing in the fact, like, when one of them would die, the government would pretty much just send a telegram saying, oh, your daughter died today, where do you want us to send the body? They didn't pay for the transportation of the body back to their families. There was no gold star, you know, in the window for which a lot of the families, of course, of servicemen who died during the war was able to put in their window to show that their, you know, child had had died during the war. There was no flag on their coffin. They weren't, of course, allowed at that point to be in any, national military cemetery. So they were not afforded the same rights as, their male counterparts, which was really sad.
And that continued for many years, didn't it? Or has it been fixed at all?
Yeah, they basically fought. 1944 is when General Hap Arnold, who was then the general of the Army Air Forces, and he was a real champion to the WASP, and he tried really hard to get them militarized. And so a bill went into Congress, and he had, at that point, had never been denied anything in Congress. Like, Hap Arnold, like, whatever the Army Air Forces wanted, like, he got.
Mm-hmm.
But sadly, the war had kind of turned, and the fact that a lot of the male pilots were returning from the war overseas, and they could see that, you know, it was going more in our favor. So a lot of the male pilots coming back, they eyed the women's jobs and wanted their jobs. And so there was a real, real bad fight, in Congress, and in just like the communities, the military communities, to dishonor the WASP. And they were disbanded in December of 1944, before the end of the war. And a lot of the WASP thought that was, particularly sad because they were still really badly needed.
I can certainly understand that. I can't imagine that happening today.
No, not at all. And they actually did not get they did get veteran status, thankfully, but not until 1977 when President Carter signed the bill into law. So they've been fighting for naturally, clearly they're entitled to, but they've been fighting for a long time for recognition.
Right. And the story that came out a couple of weeks ago was now that for whatever reason, there's a technicality, they say, and I'm going to ask you if you're familiar with this story, of where they will not allow the WASPs to be buried in Arlington Cemetery.
Right, exactly. Well, last year, then Army Secretary John McHugh reversed the decision that had been made. Even as of like 2002, the WASPs were allowed to be interned in Arlington National Cemetery, and there are actually several WASPs who aren't entered there. And so it was really kind of a strange change in policy, and which obviously affected, veterans, the WASP in particular. And actually a good friend of mine, WASP Elaine Harmon, who is actually mentioned in the editorial in the New York Times that you were referring to, her family, she died last year at the age of 95. And her family, asked to have her remains at Arlington, and she was denied. And that's kind of what started, what do you mean she was denied? Like, it's always been, they've always been eligible to be buried there. So what happened? So that's when, they kind of dug more into it and realized that they had changed this. And obviously people were outraged and was like, this is not right. And so in January of this year, legislation was introduced by Representative Martha McSally from Arizona. She sponsored a House bill, And then I think about a week later, Senator Mikulski from Maryland, who's been a real champion of the WASP, she introduced the equivalent of the Senate bill to basically introduce to reestablish the women's rights to be buried at Arlington, which should have been all along, you know, which is a technicality that, you know, the then secretary decided to do. One of the big things is, you know, a lot of things that the cemetery has been saying, that there's a lack of space. Obviously, you know, that's filling up, the cemetery is filling up. But what's strange is there's at least like 30,000, what I understand, 30,000 spaces left for remains to be inurned. So there's, you know, and we're talking about now probably around approximately 113 WASPs that are still living. So we're not talking about a huge percentage of veterans that would even, you know, some of them don't even, their families probably don't even want them to be buried at Arlington. So we're talking about a pretty small number of female veterans or just veterans that are, you know, this isn't even entails. You know, it's not really that much, you know, not as big a thing as like a lot of people think it is. So it's just really sad that the Army had to make that decision and that we have to introduce legislation in Congress to right the wrong.
Right. Are you aware of what has happened to those bills?
Well, right now, as far as I know, it's been referred to the Committee on Veterans Affairs. And it's still garnering support. They have lots of, you know, dozens of senators and congressmen who have co-sponsored it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure exactly like the time frame of when it will actually be put on the floor to be voted on. But, you know, I'm hoping it's going to be taken care of soon. It's always kind of hard in election year. You know, a lot of stuff going on in Washington. But
yeah.
I'm hoping it won't get lost in the shuffle. I'm hoping that, you know, that it will be, you know, voted on soon. Favorably for the women veterans.
Right. Well, I guess it's up to us, considering that these women are in their 90s now, and
exactly. Yeah.
You say there's only 100 of them left. We got to do something for them.
Right. Right.
Suggesting all of us contact our congressmen and senators and say, okay, let's get this done.
Exactly.
Just get it done.
Exactly. I encourage all your listeners to contact their representatives in Congress and, you know, to lend their support to these women veterans, you know, who have just been fighting, you know, for really 70 years for recognition. And, you know, it's just not good.
No, it's not fair. And I think we're much more aware of what is fair when it comes to those things today than we were 70 years ago. But it's still unacceptable that this would occur. I mean, first of all, that they didn't get benefits at all. And secondly, that now they're this is a not a rhetorical question. I'm not a lawyer because I don't know the answer here. But do you know if there is any problem with other national cemeteries, veteran cemeteries?
You know, I know one. I don't know. Yeah, I think Arlington. I think is probably the one that is most in focus because that's, you know, kind of considered hallowed ground, and it's, you know, obviously a lot of our president, you know, President Kennedy, and lots of you know, more high profile you know, people are buried there. So I think Arlington's kind of more the focus. But I think what's different is that the law or the policy that the Secretary of the Army changed. Basically, what he was saying was that, you know, the WASP are allowed to be buried in Veterans Administration cemeteries, which are most of the military cemetery, national cemeteries of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But Arlington is different in that it's not run by the VA. It's run by the Army.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think that's kind of where the technicality kind of arose. And some say, you know, there's kind of different viewpoints on, like, you know, why this happened and why this policy changed. One, you know, was that if Arlington's running out of space and they're getting stricter on their eligibility of, you know, veterans on who, you know, who can go there. But the other thing was that, you know, the thought, well, you know, the WASP can go to any of the VA, you know, national cemeteries. So, you know, but why do they have to go to Arlington kind of thing, which I think is pretty lousy reasoning.
Because it's there.
They go to Arlington, you know. I mean, they have every right like any other veteran. So.
That's true, considering some of the people that are buried there, but we won't go into that.
Right.
That are not necessarily veterans. Could you hold on? We have to take another break, and then we'll come around the other side, and I want to talk more about your book. And now that it's out in paperback, we can do a little promo, all right?
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. We'll be right back. We are listening to Veterans Radio. Stay tuned for more. And And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we are talking with Amy Strebe about her book, Flying for Her Country, and about what's happening with the WASP, the Women's, I always get this mixed up, Women's Air Force Service Pilots, better known as WASP. I just say WASP, but when I don't...
That's right, WASP for short.
That's right. If you type it into the internet, for those of you out there who want to go in there and Google WASP, put down WASP pilots, and then you'll get it. Otherwise, you'll get all the history of all the bugs that you ever wanted to know about. So we don't want to do that. But I want Amy to talk about her book a little bit. It was fascinating when we talked to her when it came out originally in 2009, and now I understand that it's coming out in paperback. So tell us about the Flying for Our Country book.
Well, Flying for Our Country actually actually originated my master's thesis in graduate school, but it's a comparative study, actually the first comparative study to be written about the WASP and the Soviet air women who actually flew combat during World War II. So I actually took both groups of pilots and compared and contrasted them, and surprisingly found that they had a lot in common. Obviously, they had a lot of things different. Of course, their political ideology and the fact that, you know, one flew combat, one didn't, which obviously brought in a lot of different things. But I was really honored to not only read about these women and read some of their books and, read their letters and see their papers, but I also was able to befriend a lot of not only the WASP, but also the Russian airwomen when I went to Moscow a couple years ago. So I was able to meet some of the women that were featured in my book, and that was a real thrill for me.
So tell me about some of these Russian pilots, and I remember reading the book, and it was really exciting to read about what missions that they went on.
Yeah, they flew, in the Soviet Union back in World War II. You know, there wasn't really any difference between male and female in terms of the military. I mean, they kind of boasted gender equality, which wasn't totally true, but, propaganda. But women, there really wasn't any difference between, the airplanes that they flew. They flew Marina Raskova, who was kind of like the equivalent, I guess, of Jacqueline Cochran, in the United States. She's formed three groups of regiments. And one was the fighter regiment, one was the dive bomber regiment, and then was the night bomber regiment. And the night bomber regiment, which were called the pilots were called night witches, and they're probably the most well known of the pilots because they flew outdated biplanes from World War I. Of course, going up in the air, fighting against the Luftwaffe and essentially canvas and wood was a little bit frightening, but the women were, they were incredibly brave and, very, very skilled in what they did and had thousands of flight hours and, were very, they were very highly decorated too. Several dozens of them were, had the Hero of the Soviet Union medal. They were awarded either posthumously or after the war, that was the highest honor that you could be awarded in the Soviet Union. So they were pretty amazing.
I think that's a fascinating part of the story. In addition to our WASPs here locally, of course, that that the women were not discriminated against. I wonder what it was like at the end of World War II. If there was any of the similarities that occurred here there,
that's what I'm going to say with the whole gender equality that the Soviets boasted was kind of more propaganda than actuality because the Russians after the war. The women, wanting to get into service academies, wanting to kind of continue with it, were basically told no, that they weren't allowed. And a lot of it was, and obviously in a time of war, a lot of societal, norms and things, are suspended for a while.
Right.
And I mean, that was the same way in the United States too. A lot of women, of course, worked during World War II. And then after World War II, they found it very difficult, to go back into that, because I think the society basically said, okay, we had a need that you filled, and then you need to go back to your, to your typical, your traditional roles as wives and mothers. And so it kind of was the same thing with the Soviet Union. I mean, they really took some time before they were able to, because they kind of saw it more of as like, we're only going to send the women up if we're absolutely desperate. Mm-hmm. That was kind of their philosophy. And actually talking to some of the Soviet air women, you know, they told me that they're kind of perplexed that American women like want to fly in combat. And, because they saw, which is kind of funny. I mean, they thought as they were just, you know, feeling a need. I mean, they were literally fighting for the survival of their country.
Well,
with Germany having invaded the Soviet Union. So it was a little different than from here. You know, we didn't actually get invaded, but they were fighting for their, you know, for their very lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit different, but you know, so I remember talking with some of them and they were just kind of like, perplexed, like, well, you know, I know you can fly, but why would you want to? You know, why would you want to put yourself through? Because they had seen like such horrors, you know, during the war,
sure.
You know, flying in combat. So they, you know, couldn't really understand why. Why would you want to do that unless you absolutely had to? So it was very different mentality, I guess.
Well, it's kind of changed a little bit. I can ask you, you know, about that right now. So what do you think about opening up all of the combat billets, I guess you could call them, or STET or MLSs, mm-hmm. and all that other
things. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think what a lot of people don't understand is that women have been in combat for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they haven't had the official recognition, but I know there are a lot of women who have been injured and some obviously killed, you know, even though they're not actually taking on a combat role, but they've been close enough to the action where, you know, they're in harm's way. And so I think, you know, and I think that's throughout our entire history, you know, from the Revolutionary War, Civil War. I mean, there have been women who've been fighting, you know, maybe not officially with the armies, but they've been there. They've been in the trenches. And so I think this is just an official recognition of something that's already, you know, really happened throughout history.
That's true. And, of course, now they want those to have women register for the draft, too.
Right, right. And that will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that goes, too, because, you know, that's a part. And that's the thing. We haven't really had to do the draft in so many years. I mean, it's been a volunteer army for many years. So
right.
It'll be interesting to see if that makes a difference.
I think, well, other countries do it, and it doesn't seem to hurt them too much.
Right,
I think
right.
It'd be very interesting to see what happens with that whole thing. So if we're flying for her country is now out in paperback, where could we get a hold of that?
Well, it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, some bookstores around, but probably Amazon and Barnes & Noble and, you know, some of the other online bookstores are probably the best place to get it.
You had another book that you wrote prior to flying for our country, and I want you to talk, give me a one-minute briefing on that one. You wrote about the war in Iraq.
Oh, yeah. It was called Desert Dogs, the Marines of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And that was a good friend of mine, photographer Russ Bryant. He photographed. He went into the war in Iraq and took these really amazing photographs of just kind of what it was like to be on deployment and you know, just and to see. He didn't see a lot of action. Like the battalion that he was with didn't see a whole lot of action. He was kind of more in the back, not so much the front of the action. But he took some amazing pictures of just. Of the Marines and just like what, you know, it was like to be there and to be, you know, obviously a world away from your families. And, Russ and I had actually spent some time in Kuwait back in 1998. Mm-hmm. And, so it was kind of cool to revisit, you know, that part of the country. And, you know, so it was really cool. It was really a great project for me to be involved with. And, you know, and I think we got some good response from the you know, people who were there.
I think it's always important to see these photo books that a lot of these veterans have put together of what these places actually look like, because we only see it on the news. We don't know.
Right, right. You don't understand what the day-to-day life is. I mean, when I was there in Kuwait with Russ, I mean, we, you know, had no electricity, no running water. You know, it was just for me. I mean, like, I'd never even been camping before. So it was quite a departure from what I was used to. But it made me, even though my husband, who actively serves in the military right now, you know, obviously I have tremendous respect for the military, but I think until you actually go and see what it's like to be, like, away from the country, you know, away from your home and away from, like, you know, eating MREs and, mm-hmm. like, not, you know, not having the comforts of home, it really does make you respect the people who go and do this voluntarily on a daily basis all over the world.
I think it's fascinating. We're talking with Amy Strebe here. Do you have anything coming out in the future?
Not yet. I'm always doing research and always, you know, trying to figure out what my next big project's going to be. There's lots of interesting things to pursue, but I'm just hoping we can get through this, with a wasp. I hope we can, you know, give them the honors that they're due. So I'm really hoping we can get this, you know, kind of figured out for them and resolved.
We'll do that. We'll make sure. Everybody out there, call your congressman, call your senator, make sure that these wasps are given permission to be buried at Arlington. And it's not that this woman that wasn't allowed to be buried, it's not like it's a full casket. She's already been cremated. It's a little box.
Right, you know, right.
There's got to be space for that. So
exactly.
We'll be talking more about this as we find out more. But Amy, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale.
And I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. All right, well, another one, as they say in the can, we've talked about Veterans Matters today. We want to make sure that you go to veteransmatter.org to find out more about that, coming up with the deposit money for homeless veterans once they get an apartment. We talked about Pets for Vets going on down in New Mexico. It's a great program. Maybe we can expand that around the country. And we talked more about the WASPs, the women pilots from World War II. So this is what we do on Veterans Radio. If you've got a story or an event or anything else that's going on, contact us, and we'll try to get the story on the air. I've got one thing for you to think about before I say goodbye today. You know, the Supreme Court they're looking for a nomination for the Supreme Court. How about putting a veteran on a Supreme Court? There hasn't been one on there from Korea, Vietnam, or Iraq, Afghanistan. How about that? There's got to be somebody qualified, you know it, and they can't get as much trouble as some of these people are going to. So until next week with Bob Gould, we'll be back. This is Dale Thronberry thanking you all for listening to Veterans Radio, and you are dismissed.